Welcome to the CGA IGC podcast series, brought to you by CGA's Education Committee and made possible through the generous support of our sponsor, Linsight. Each episode aims to bring you an in-depth discussion related to emerging data, clinical challenges, and unique perspectives in the world of hereditary GI cancers. Before we start, we'd like to remind you that the content of this podcast is not intended to replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and the content reflects expert opinion at the time of recording. Keep listening to find out more about this episode's host, guest, and featured topic. Also, be sure to learn more about our sponsor at linsightlabs.com. That's L-Y-N-S-I-G-H-T labs.com.
Hello, everyone. My name is Josie Baker. I'm a genetic counselor at The Ohio State University Comprehensive Cancer Center, and I will be your host today. During today's podcast, I have the distinct honor in introducing our expert guest, Lindsay Walker, a certified pediatric genetic counselor at Children's Hospital Los Angeles. Our focus will be on providing care to the community of The Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints. Lindsay, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's go ahead and jump right in. Can you start off by telling us a little bit about you and your community?
Yes, of course. So I am a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and I know that can be a mouthful for people. That's our church's full name, but some people may know us as Mormons or LDS, just as kind of like nicknames that have come up over the years. And so I wanted to give a little bit of background about why that is and why it's important to focus on our full name. And that really has to do with kind of our history and then also our beliefs. So we are a Christian denomination, and what sets us apart from other denominations is that we believe our church is the restoration of Christ's ancient church in New Testament times. So the modern or quote unquote latter day church was organized on April 6, 1830 in Fayette, New York. And at that time, there was only 6 official members, but we've grown a lot since then. Now we're up to approximately 6 million individuals in the United States, over 9 million in North America, and over 17 million worldwide. And the reason, going back to our nickname Mormon, that comes from a book of scripture that we read, specifically our denomination reads along with the Bible, and that's called the Book of Mormon. And so especially because we are a proselyting church and a church that has missionaries that go out and teach people more, we use the Book of Mormon to not only set us apart, but really to help people to understand more about Christ. And I think that's where the important distinction comes in, that when people call us Mormons, of course, like, we recognize that our church has a long name and it's a nickname, but that it's kind of taking away from our focus. And many people get confused, like, that we're not Christian. But as I mentioned, the official name of our church is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so just something to be conscious about. And we really appreciate everyone's efforts. And we know it can be a long name, but that's kind of some information in general about the church. We are not only in the U.S. and North America, but also worldwide, as I mentioned. Of course, the church started or was restored in New York, but again, we have individuals all over the world in 160 countries and territories. It's just through our history, through a history of persecution. In the early days, many of the members needed to travel out west. So this, when you think about like the pioneers in the 1800s, many of them were members of our church who were persecuted and made to leave their homes behind and go out west. And so many people are still located in Utah. And Utah's current population is 65% members of our church. And overall, Utah has 32% of all of the U.S. members. So even though we're a small group, only about 1% of Americans identify as members of the church, definitely a high concentration in Utah, and still enough that maybe you may or may not have known that you have interacted with members of our church, either as patients or as colleagues.
Thank you for that introduction, Lindsay. And when we are thinking about seeing members of your community in the healthcare setting, can you tell us a little about the community's views on healthcare and preventative care?
So I would say in general, our views on healthcare and preventative care are generally encouraged from church leaders and generally accepted by church members. So a part of our doctrine is called the Word of Wisdom, which is a health code that we follow that we believe has come from God to help keep our bodies healthy. And so that includes things like not drinking alcohol, not doing drugs, not drinking coffee or tea, things that can be addictive or harmful to our bodies. And so there's restrictions, like I just mentioned, but then there are also things that are highly encouraged, like getting enough sleep and getting exercise, as well as, you know, proper hygiene and eating nutritiously. So in general, we're definitely taught to take care of our bodies and to stay healthy. And so there's definitely like a general encouragement to make sure that means you're also taking care of your health and that you're engaging with competent medical professionals who are licensed in their area of practice, as well as, of course, with counseling with these medical professionals, that you can also seek guidance through prayer and, again, reading books of scripture, through personal guidance that you can receive from God about what is going to be the best way to take care of yourself, take care of your family's health. Actually, our president of our church, who is also our prophet and main leader, he has a previous profession as a heart surgeon. And so while he's retired from this profession now, in general, he does speak about health topics while not exactly promoting any specific like health screening, definitely encouraging us to have good health. And I would say in general, we're pretty trusting of the medical community. But I will say in all of this and all of our discussion that we're going to have today that all members are not the same. We're not a monolith, and our members come from all over the world. Some people have a very long history of their family being in the church, and some are maybe just new converts. And so they do not have that same medical history. So they might have other cultural influences or other family influences that impact their decision. And I'm just going to be speaking a little bit from my personal experience, some research that I've done, but definitely not representative of all people, just some things to consider. I thought I'd mention that as well.
And when we dive a little bit deeper into those medical decisions, can you discuss the infrastructure in your community when making medical decisions, if it's between surgery, medication, or even considering genetic testing?
We do have some general guidelines that we have, as I mentioned before, seeking competent medical help, exercising faith. And I wouldn't say there's necessarily like a very structured infrastructure in our community. I know that there is in other faith communities. And so we do have leaders in our community that are available to really discuss anything. So I guess hypothetically, in a situation where maybe you're considering surgeries or treatment or things, it's generally kind of left up to the individual, and like that personal autonomy in the medical setting and also personal relationship directly with God, with Jesus Christ, to be able to pray directly for seeking those answers. But as I mentioned, we do have leaders too. And so in conjunction with personal prayer and kind of seeking out and pondering the decision that you might have to make, you can also go to your leader and you can ask them for, not necessarily for medical advice, but more for advice on comfort or like a spiritual guidance of how do I get these answers on my own. We also do encourage members to seek out blessings, which are given by authorized individuals in our church that can essentially like a special prayer for healing, for support, and for comfort. But again, recognizing that everything is in God's timing and according to his will. And so even with these special blessings, even with blessings of healing that we will accept God's will and also do our end to impact, like, whatever the treatment may be. Of course, we recognize that you can't have the miracle without the effort that you put into it. So making sure that, especially if you're diagnosed with something like cancer, it just can't be prayed away. That in conjunction with praying, that you also need to get that healthcare, whatever it may be recommended by your doctor and whatever you personally feel like is best for you, being surgery or other treatment options. And I would include genetic testing in that as well.
And how does your community view the concept of genetic testing, even if that's between like an oncology cancer setting or preventative measures for hereditary cancer risks or even in a pediatric setting?
I did a lot of research for the previous talk that I was able to give at NSGC. And it's quite interesting when you think about our community, as I described it before, started out as a very small insular community with just a few families, and especially those focused on like Western European ancestry, people from England, Germany, generally, who have moved from Europe to New York at that time in the US. And especially another focus that we have in our church is to have families. We know that family is the most important unit in the community. We're really encouraged to have those family units. We believe that families can exist throughout eternity, meaning that even after we die, so forever. So there's really an importance placed on having family, having kids. There's a lot of history of having large families with lots of children. There's also an importance placed on record keeping and specifically like family history and genealogy. And so with this background, there's actually been a lot of opportunities for researchers, specifically genetic researchers, to be able to not only study different family groups and individuals in our community. So when it comes to genetic testing, it's led to a lot of discoveries of new genes like APC, BRCA1, and KCNH2. And so it's like through church support and these individual families' contribution to research that it's proven to be a great benefit to these genetic research efforts. So I would say with that kind of history and background, I would say generally genetic testing is accepted. And I think people really care a lot about understanding their family. They want to help others. And so that might be some reason why they might participate in genetic testing. Through the use of Utah Population Database, family history reports, and public records of the church, there was identified an American founder mutation in attenuated FAP. There was two large families that shared, one was in Utah, one was in New York, and they were identified to have a common ancestor. And of the individuals that were tested, they identified a conserved haplotype surrounding their APC allele. And so I think that there's definitely encouragement in participating in these types of not only research, but in general of genetic testing. And so not representative for all people, but I would say in general that people would be pretty accepting of genetic testing, either in the cancer side of things, potentially in the pediatric side as well. There's a lot of different considerations when it comes to each of these different types of testing. When it comes to prenatal testing, there is a little bit more of hesitation, I think, because we also have a strong belief for the sanctity of human life. And there is definitely a lot of considerations that need to go into having an abortion. So I think in general, people think, oh, well, why would I do genetic testing if I don't plan on having an abortion? And so I think that's kind of where some education with any of the different fields of genetic counseling, I think that that piece on the prenatal side of having the education to know potentially what are the benefits that could be good for them, even just if it's to understand more about a child before they're born and to make sure that they're getting the proper health care that they need before they're born, even if it's not for abortion or like family planning purposes.
And it sounds like in your community, it's really encouraged not only to learn about those hereditary and genetic risks, but also rely on faith and spiritual healing too.
It's definitely like having both aspects working together. And I would say if I had to choose one or the other to focus on, I think one thought that I've heard a lot in our church is just that good information leads to good inspiration. And so you have to have the information in order to receive sometimes those inspiration or revelation from God to be able to guide you in your life. So I would say both of them are equally important in our community.
So for our audience, a lot of us are genetic counselors or gastrointestinal providers, such as gastroenterologists or surgeons. How do you think that we can better support individuals in your community when they're considering genetic testing and possible implications?
When it comes to, firstly, even identifying members of our community who might be your patients, I do think that that is difficult. Even for myself personally, there's not really any clear identifying characteristic that would be either like visibly seen from like someone's appearance or their way of speaking or thinking that you could even identify someone as a member of our faith community. So I would just say in general, just similar considerations that you would have for all of your patients, that making sure that you're providing options, that you're not making assumptions about how someone would choose when it comes to for or against genetic testing or for or against certain treatment options, really making sure that they're given equal opportunity to be educated on the situation, and that all individuals need to be given the opportunity to learn about their options, whether for or against genetic testing or for or against certain treatments. One consideration I did have that I was thinking about is just coming back to the importance of families in our community, and having children for many individuals is something that's really important. And so, especially in considerations of removing reproductive organs, I think that can carry a lot of weight, and that could be a very difficult decision. Of course, that's going to require potentially a lot of time and effort to make those decisions prayerfully, maybe even just to come to terms with the potential impact that could have for their life or what they had imagined for their future life. So I guess just continuing to be sensitive to the potential impacts of genetic testing results or potential treatment options, that some of these things are really ingrained and are an essential point of someone's identity and their faith. And so sometimes when faced with decisions that might be really hard, that could be potentially taken away from them. I guess just to be patient and to continue to have that empathy for those hard decisions that might need to be made. Of course, a lot of times when it comes to cancer treatment, it's going to be pretty difficult. So I guess just learning about different faith communities, even if we don't know exactly which faith community our patients might belong to, that as we recognize and we understand the potential deeper impact that it could have for some, that we are able to feel that empathy and maybe connect more with our patients.
And then to wrap up our discussion today, do you have any take-home messages or any additional thoughts that you would like the listeners to remember from our conversation?
Not everyone's going to be the same. And I think that especially members of our church, we're so diverse in our community backgrounds, ethnicity, country of origin, experiences. Each person is complex, and that in general, I think learning more about different faith communities really does help us to deepen connections, allow for increased empathy, and we might not know everyone's backstory. And honestly, when it comes to genetic counseling, we don't really get that much time to spend with our patients, and sometimes it's maybe only one visit, maybe two visits. We don't have this continued follow-up. So I would say that our potential impact, especially when it comes to impacts on religion, might be smaller. But I think that even if we can take something into our individual life, to when we're engaging with others, when we learn about people, especially those in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, that we do have some background. We can be able to come in and be able to connect with them further. So two other things that could be take-homes or just other things that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet is that when I was talking about some of the research that's been done in our community, I think it's important as genetic counselors to be able to recognize both the contribution and impact from certain communities in genetic research. Individuals in our church, and especially from Utah, have made up a large portion of what we think of as like our reference genome. And that while at the same time we can recognize that, we can also recognize the imbalance and lack of research for other communities and advocate for them as well. And of course, we know that several ethnicities or individuals with specific countries of origin, especially Black and individuals of color, are not well represented in our reference genome. And I think that we can both recognize and be grateful for the research that we do have, but also seek to make sure that we're uplifting other communities and making sure that we're including them in our research as well. And the final thought that I just wanted to add in as well is that especially when it comes to popular media, our church is sometimes portrayed in certain ways. For example, in the popular Broadway musical, The Book of Mormon, it's a satirical musical comedy about church missionaries. Or maybe you've seen the recent reality television show, The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. And I think that especially from our church perspective, we don't discourage individuals from watching or consuming this media. A lot of members of the church also watch them and think that they're very funny and lots of things to be able to relate to them, because of course, you know, it is based in some truth and then takes a comedy spin to it, like in most things. But I think, again, it just is important to think of individuals that are actually in this community as not as caricatures, but as people that are complex and have differing sides, differing levels of devotion or religiosity in their personal lives. And when you do see some of these TV shows or Broadway musicals, that it's good also to just engage with individuals in the community to learn more about them. And I think it leads to a lot of great discussions. I know I personally have had some great discussions with friends who watched a Secret Lives of Mormon Wives reality TV show and were able to make a connection and allow them to learn much more about our faith community, about me personally. And I would just say, don't be shy. Don't be hesitant to ask questions. And I think that in general, members of our community, we don't get offended by these questions. And we really like to talk, you know, like anyone, we like to talk about our lives, and especially something that we think is really important holds a very special place in our hearts. And so as long as we do it with respect and lead to an open conversation, then we're more than happy to be able to participate. And that's why I'm so grateful also to be on this podcast and have the opportunity to present at NSGC like we did, because I think so many people are curious about our faith community and individuals in it. And so it's really awesome to have this open platform. I got some feedback from individuals that attended NSGC also in our faith community that said that they were so nervous or they were so scared about going to the talk, because they were curious, what are they going to say about us? What incorrect information are we going to have to explain to people or counteract? And so again, just making sure that we're getting our information from a reliable source and being able to connect with individuals in that community, like in all situations, is really important. So thanks again, Josie, for letting me be on the podcast.
It has been an absolute pleasure. And thank you so much for all that you have been doing for not only us today, but for your community. And, you know, at this time, we'll go ahead and conclude the podcast. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for an episode of the 2025 CGA IGC podcast series. Stay tuned for the next episode to come. Thank you to all of our listeners.